Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, Dave Colasar and Mike Raid are with us. They're at the WWFD transmitter site, the one, only, and first all-digital AM transmitter site in the nation. And they've got a big surprise for us by the end of the show. You're not going to believe it. It's coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support. Online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And on this show, we're also going to talk about something cool. This is a new old stock, the brand new, an HD radio with the brand name of Directed. These were real popular when HD radio was making its debut across a lot of, like, hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. And I have five of these to give away today. Five of them to give away. We may not get them all given away today, so we'll check replays of the show and give them away. We'll do it as fair as we can, randomly as we can. But here's the deal. If you're watching the show right now, repost this or repost the announcement that the show was starting. Share it on Facebook. Repost it on Twitter. Share it on Twitter. And or wherever you see it, and you're automatically eligible. USA addresses only. And I'll get in touch with you because most of you I know. And if I don't know you, well, introduce yourself. If I call your name out, that you've won one of these. What's in the box? Well, I guess we can look. Oops, sorry, drop that. More of this later. But what's in the box is this this thing that attaches to your dashboard. It comes with some Velcro on the back, and this is the control. It's the head unit. And then this is the electronics right here that goes, you know, under your dash or under your seat or something like that. It's got inputs and outputs, a loop through for your car radio antenna, and then audio outputs, and then the plug for the remote. Anyway, this is the Directed brand, AM, FM, HD. And yes, I believe it does what we're going to be talking about today. It certainly should. So we'll find out. We'll talk about that. We're giving away five of them today. It's going to be challenging, but we're going to really try to work through it. Hey, so I'm Kirk. I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance, and that's why I'm coming to you today from the Telos Alliance studio here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I appreciate Telos for giving me a little time off on Thursdays to do This Week in Radio Tech. You should check out telosalliance.com. They're great people to work for, and they also make great equipment. Chris Tobin is my usual co-host, but sadly, Chris is not going to be able to make it to be with us today. So you have to put up with me and our amazing guests. Chris, as a lot of you heard in the broadcast world, that John Lyons, who is single-handedly responsible for so much of the good rebuilding of FM radio broadcasting in New York City, especially after 9/11, John Lyons passed away this past week, and today is the wake for John Lyons. So we certainly send our condolences to John's family. Chris is there, and he's also expressing our condolences to John's family at the wake in New York. All right, so that business out of the way. We hope Chris will be back. In fact, I'm sure he'll be back next week. And in fact, next week, I think we're going to replay an episode of This Week in Radio Tech where John Lyons made an amazing presentation about One World Trade Center. And I think that'd be a nice tribute to John. So we're working on making that that replay available to you. So that's the inside baseball here on This Week in Radio Tech. And now it's time to bring in our guests. I want to introduce to you two people who I've known for a very short period of time, but I've been delighted to chat with them. Welcome from the transmitter site of WWFD. We have Dave Colasar and Mike Raid. Gentlemen, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Thanks for having us.
Dave is on the left, closest to where his lower third says Dave, and Mike Raid is on the right side of your radio dial. Dave, first of all, you're apparently getting an award, or you're going to be honored with an award from Radio World. But tell me, what's the elevator speech on what Dave Colasar does, and then we'll get to Mike.
I am the transmitter engineer for Hubbard Radio in Washington, D.C., which includes WTOP, Federal News Network, WBQH, and WWFD. And I'm also the program director of The Gamut, which is the format heard on WWFD.
And that is the all-digital AM radio station. That's the subject of our show today, right?
Correct.
All right. Awesome. Good. And joining you in the same old studio, no longer used, except, hey, we resurrected it for This Week in Radio Tech, Mike Raid from Xperi. Mike, welcome in. Tell us a little bit about you.
Great. As you know, my name is Mike Raid. Sorry. I am the senior manager of broadcast technology for Xperi. I handle all things manufacturer broadcast related. I do a lot of interfacing with the broadcast manufacturers, our licensed partners. I also do special projects. I do travel a lot internationally. If we are setting up a test station or doing field testing or field trials in other countries. Also, I currently am working temporarily right now, but currently working with Arctic Palm Products on support.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Arctic Palm does all that metadata work for HD radio and regular. Yeah, that's awesome. So, Mike, later on in the show, because we got to do a little talk pre-show conference, and Mike has an amazing things to tell us about the technology involved with this all digital AM HD radio. So we're going to be finding, we're talking about some fun stuff, but also we're going to get down in the weeds about how some of this stuff works. And I'm so excited about it. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is, normally I have my props right here, but excuse me, I'm going to duck down here and grab my prop box. Ta-da! My prop box. Max Connect Wireless. You know, my friend Josh Bone at Max Connect, he's the one who has developed this amazing service where you use, this is a cradle point cellular modem. And if you may be very familiar with these, you may see them at kiosks or in mobile trucks, wherever you need to get internet wirelessly. But this is special. It's an ordinary cradle point box, but it's the SIM cards inside that are special, because Max Connect Wireless is a wireless carrier. I'm not sure if it's an NVMO exactly, but basically you get service, data service from Josh Bone with Max Connect Wireless, and you get priority. Your data gets priority. You can be in a stadium with 80,000 people at halftime on their cell phones, sending pictures to Facebook and to mom and doing FaceTime and whatever else. And guess what? You still get the data that you have paid for in real time with Max Connect Wireless. That's right. You can get this with two different SIMs if you want. This one has AT&T and it has Verizon as well. And so using Max Connect Wireless, you can use this for all kinds of things in broadcasting. You know, we've done our podcast This Week in Radio Tech from several locations using Max Connect Wireless. And we've also, stations use this as a temporary STL to the transmitter site, maybe to back up what they have, or to go do a remote broadcast from college, high school ball games, even pro games. Max Connect Wireless, this is so cool. You've got a wired connection on the back here, so that's where your LAN connection goes. You also have Wi-Fi out of this. So maybe you've got a whole press box with some people in it from your broadcast facility. You can wire into your PC or your audio over IP codec if you want to. Then you can. It has a couple antennas that are paddle antennas for the cellular connection. You can also hang on here a couple of connections, antennas for the Wi-Fi connection. So lots of cool things. Check it out, maxconnectwireless.com. There's a link in the show notes. It's spelled funny. You can see right there, MAXXKONNECT wireless.com. And highly recommended for broadcasters. All right. On our show, we're talking to Dave Colasar and Mike Raid about this AM station. So, Dave, why don't you start us out about how this idea came to you? Had something to do with this station's not doing so well. We need to do something with it. And you're in the shower, and I think we left it off there.
Yes, that's right. It was about Christmas time, 2016. I knew that WWFD was going to get an FM translator. Mm. And the station being a music, it's a AAA music format. So as soon as we would get this FM translator, all of the audience would migrate to the translator, and nobody would be listening to the AM anymore. The AM would just be a legal justification to keep this translator on the air.
Not an uncommon scenario for some AMs. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So the thought came to me, again, this is one of those in shower realizations, was that if I could do something with this AM signal to make it so it can actually add value in the post-translator configuration of this station. So the thought occurred to me, why don't we try the all-digital mode of HD radio? Now, I had heard the all-digital mode in about 2008 or 2009, because at this very transmitter site, diplexed onto this facility was Xperi's, then Ubiquiti, their experimental license station on 1670.
Oh, that was at your site?
That was here.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that. I remember reading about this experimental station, and it was I thought it might be standalone or the AM was off the air, whatever, but it was diplexed in real time with the existing WWFD. Okay.
It was diplexed into the night tower, which just floats during the day.
Right, because we're non-directional.
Okay.
We're non-directional during the day, which leaves our second tower free for use by somebody else. So I approached management at Hubbard, who were they saw the potential of this idea. I don't know at that point quite how enthusiastic they were, but I think they were at least willing to humor me. It was a few weeks later. I happened to be attending the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, January 2017. So I walked up to the Xperi booth and I said, hi, I'm the engineer and program director of a station, of an AM station in Frederick, Maryland, and I'm interested in taking my station all digital. Could you help me out? Give me some advice or whatever. Let's talk. And the person that I approached was Mike. And not only that, Mike happens to live about 10 miles from the transmitter. So here we are in Vegas, and I met somebody who lives right next door to the station that I want to convert. And he works at the company whose help I needed. So that was very fortuitous. The process started where we characterized our antenna system. We looked at our transmitters. We evaluated, documented everything, and we did about a year of engineering work, figuring out just how everything was going to fit together. Last year, we signed it on the air.
Now, let's spend a minute explaining what this all digital mode is, because, you know, some years ago when HD came out and a number of FMs went to it and some AM stations added HD, and I was working for the Telos Omnia at the time. I visited a number of transmitter sites where the customer had bought an audio processor for their AM HD, and the same processor from Omnia would put out a properly configured analog AM audio signal, you know, with asymmetry and all that stuff. And it would also put out a audio, left and right audio, that had been properly processed for the HD. And a number of stations did this. And then over the next year, two, three, four, five, a number of those stations turned it off. They were hearing hiss, in the background on radios that had a wide IF bandwidth. Maybe they were, said they were interfering with some other stations. In other words, it wasn't all honey and milk or milk and honey. And there's still some AMs that are on doing, AMHD in this hybrid mode. You've got an analog in the middle, and you've got digital carriers out on the side, and that's what we all think of with the FM system, and that's how the AM system started. But there were other modes that were defined, and defined not only, I guess, on paper, but I'm given to understand that an HD radio like the one that we showed here at the beginning of the show, these are already capable of picking up an all digital mode where there is no analog carrier. So, Mike, am I kind of right on what I'm saying so far here?
Yeah, you are. I think the thing that needs to be said about the hybrid mode of AM/HD, or what we call in the industry the MA1 mode, is that mm-hmm. it's a compromise at best, and it was a bad compromise. The digital carriers were 30 dB down from the analog to prevent mm-hmm. or to minimize the self-interference. That really affected the robustness of the digital signal. So when you would benefit the most from a digital signal, which would be to overcome noise when you would need it the most,
any sort of interference or, you know, first channel,
because it was fragile.
Yep.
So, yeah. And also too, because, people were processing the analog signal like you would normally do, like an analog signal with asymmetry, and driving the audio as loud and as hard as you can to overcome noise. Mm-hmm. People were processing the digital the same way too, which was muddying the codec. So even when the radios transitioned to the digital mode in hybrid, it didn't sound that impressive. So MA1 and the perceptions of MA1, the hybrid mode, really did a disservice to the potential of adopting the all digital mode.
Yeah, I think, you know, to a certain extent too, because MA1 did sound so good, in audio quality, that the blend, because of the lack of robustness, as Dave said, it's, you know, think about 30 dB down, what that really means. That's 0.1% of the unmodulated carrier on the AM. That's a really small percentage of power.
Yeah.
So what would happen is start to get into high interference prone areas or high blend areas where the signal would blend from the digital back to the analog. The difference in audio was just so stark that it was almost a distraction to a point. And we would get a lot of complaints, and a lot of car manufacturers would feed those complaints back to us, saying, well, I got a lot of our clients who are complaining about the audio quality of the analog. What are you going to do about it? You know, because of your system. And there's nothing we can do, because we have to limit the IF bandwidth in the AM receiver for the analog, so that it doesn't create even more interference to the digital.
Gotcha. So I think we can say that the hybrid mode, the MA1 mode on AM, was challenging. So much had to be exactly right at the transmission end, and even when it was, and exactly right in the receiver end, and there was still room for difficulties with audio. Now, I want to point out one thing, though. Back in the earlier days of HD, my buddy Frank Foti at Omnia gave me I want to say it was a Tascam, but it may have been a Pioneer. Anyway, it was an add-on to the radio. It let me hear HD in my car, and I installed it in my Toyota 4Runner. I've long since taken it out, but I got to listen to HD, and I was on a business trip in St. Louis, and I was listening to a station that didn't care about being really loud. They just wanted to sound good. It was KFUO, and they had, I believe they have an FM, but they also had an AM. And this is a radio station that's owned by, I think, the Lutheran Seminary there. And I was visiting them, and I was driving around St. Louis. I was on my cell phone at the time, and I was listening to the AM, and it had switched to the AM/HD because they were doing AM/HD on KFUO in St. Louis. And so my mind wasn't really on the radio, but I pulled in. I was driving to KFUO. I pulled in the radio station parking lot. I finished my cell phone conversation just then. I put the cell phone down, and I looked at the radio, because my brain said, I thought I was listening to an AM station, but this sounds like an FM station. And yes, it wasn't going to fool me into thinking it was, you know, fabulous quality, but it wasn't typical AM. And so my brain, I sat there literally for 10 seconds going like, huh, what's going on? That sounds too good. And so I did, and I've told the story many times. I just want to report to people that, that, you know, the hybrid mode, the digital could sound perfectly adequate of decent entertainment quality and fooled me for 10 seconds while I wasn't thinking about it, thinking that, wow, why does that sound so good? Oh, it's, that's the digital AM. And again, they weren't trying to do crazy things with processing. It just sounded good. So, you know, I know that this technology can work, but I also know that there are difficulties. And without taking too much of the time here, I got to say, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to jump into some of the technicalities of this all digital mode and talk to Dave about the programming that he puts on. That's all coming up. Remember, we're giving away five of these today on the show. So if you go to your Facebook and find find the show announcement, share that, and you'll be eligible to win. USA only. I'll be shipping to five USA winners. This Week in Radio Tech comes to you every week, and it's brought to you in part by my friends at Angry Audio. Now, if you've loved using Studio Hub, Studio Hub Plus, adapters, cables, connectors, you know the Studio Hub stuff. It's the stuff that helps you wire up really fast. If you never use this, it's fantastic. You know, these are a typical cable adapter like this with an RJ45 on one side and your professional connectors on the other. These are XLRs. You can also get them with tip ring sleeve quarter inch connectors like that. You can get these male or female. Here's some female XLRs. And then you could also get them in a different format where they have a male RJ45 to whatever connector you like. They also come in longer lengths. So this one's coiled up, but this is a 6-footer that has RJ45 on one end and male XLRs on the other. You use these as part of the Studio Hub system to make your wiring go quick and easy. I have wired a number of studios now and either only once or never have had to pull out a soldering iron to finish wiring the audio in the studio. Oh, by the way, they have things to help you wire GPIO as well. If you use, let's say, an Axia system and you use GPIOs, they've got adapters that go from the 15-pin D-sub connector out to RJ45, so you can get that done. And right now, if you order yourself some Studio Hub adapters from your favorite dealer, Angry Audio will add this to your order. They'll give you a free 7-foot patch cable, a Cat5e patch cable. Make your wiring a whole lot easier. Talk to any of your dealers, or better yet, go to the website for Angry Audio. It's angryaudio.com, angryaudio.com, and you'll see the huge selection of Studio Hub adapters, cables that they have for you. And they have them in stock, ready to ship. I've been to the warehouse myself. It's actually just down the road from me right now, down in Franklin, Tennessee. And they got all this ready to go. All right, check them out, angryaudio.com. We'll be right back after this word from CalRec.
CalRec Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I.O. gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot, CalRec, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Check them out, calrec.com/twert. All right, it's Kirk Harnack here. Unfortunately, Chris Tobin can't be with us today, but our guests are here. We're talking with Dave Colasar and Mike Raid. They are at the transmitter site right now of WWFD in Frederick, Maryland. And this is the first all-digital AM station. So, Dave, let's see. Gosh, you started to talk a little bit earlier about the decision to do this, and let's talk about that. And then we'll get into the technicalities of the MA3 mode. You told us earlier you went to Hubbard and said, "Hey, can we do this?" And to take us from there until the time you got on the air.
Well, After we got the okay from Hubbard, as I said, I approached Xperi at the Consumer Electronics Show in January of 2017, and that triggered a collaboration between Hubbard, Xperi, Nautel,
Kentronic Gates, Labs, definitely
Broadcast Electronic, yeah, BE, Cavell Mertz. Basically, it was
Potomac Instruments. Yep.
Yeah. It was a grand meeting of the minds. Yep. I guess you could say, in terms of what would be required and how do we do this? And so we decided that we needed to evaluate two things. First, we needed to evaluate the station's antenna system. The antenna system, quite frankly, was in very poor shape. I think there's a lot of AM stations out there that have suffered from neglect over the years, where if it's on the air and you can hear the audio, then, you know, it's like good enough. It's fine. But a lot of things had happened to the array over the years, such as there was an isocoupler on it for an RPU antenna. And at some point that was ripped off. And anybody who's an AM engineer would know that that would change the impedance of the tower, of one of the towers, which of course makes the phaser go haywire. So yeah. what somebody did, and this was probably about 30 years ago, after they ripped off the isocoupler, saw that all the parameters were out of spec and the transmitter probably had high viswire, was they just started cranking on the phaser until the readings were right again. Which will lead you to a solution to get the station back on the air, but not the proper solution, because now what you've done is you've mismatched the transmission lines, and you've also inevitably narrowed the bandwidth of the system. So there are a lot of things like that. Also, to WWFD's disadvantage is that the towers are short. They're 72.5 degrees tall, and they have top loading to bring them up to 90 degrees. But you don't get something for nothing. You know, there's a reduction in bandwidth when you're not using a quarter wave or a half wave tower. So there are a number of obstacles like that. Within the antenna system itself, there are a lot of L networks, which needed to be converted to T networks so that we can control the phase shifts, and therefore the bandwidths, because you can achieve optimal bandwidths with the correct phase shifts. And so a lot of redesigning of the antenna system needed to happen to optimize it and to allow it to pass an all digital signal. That was quite a process, and we learned a lot of things along the way. Mike, I think Mike wanted to get out of the office, so he helped me out a lot with this.
Yeah, it definitely got me out of the office a lot. So, anytime I can go to an AM site, I would much rather sit in a cramped, damp, smelly, hot ATU unit than shuffle papers all day. I would much rather do that.
And our ATUs meet that definition. especially.
you mentioned our friends from East Tennessee at Kentronic. Was it them that helped you do that, or did you have another professional engineer involved with getting these better matched and broadbanded? Cool.
What we did was we characterized the array with a bridge network analyzer. Well, Tom King first came up here to look at it himself.
Yep, there's a little story too. One takeaway is why do we do all these trade shows? And we Jeff Detweiler and I from Xperi, we are helping to push forward the HD radio technology in Canada right now. So we do a lot of trade shows in Canada. And one of the trade shows we went to was the Central Canadian Broadcasters Expo in outside of Toronto, Ontario. Tom King happened to be attending that as well. And he approached us and says, I hear this rumor that you guys are looking to turn on a all digital AM. And I says, yes, we have the station in line. It's WWFD in Frederick. It's owned by Hubbard. And Tom King says, whatever you need, just let me know. I will do everything pro bono. Just pick up the phone. Here's my email. Here's my card. And literally this was done. He volunteered hours and hours of time. He came up here from Tennessee, swept the tower. Just hours and hours of work that they put in.
Looking at when he came up here with the analyzer for the first time, he may have regretted offering that.
Yeah. The sweep was pretty bad, especially the night pattern was pretty bad.
This is good news. This means that even people with neglected AMs, it's possible to improve them to the point where it's necessary. And by the way, I heard this rule of thumb, and you guys earlier said that was pretty much true. If your AM transmission system would pass AM stereo properly, then there's a good chance that there's little that needs to be done to make it pass all digital AM.
Correct. And also, too, if your AM system once did the MA1 mode, the hybrid mode of HD, and you've turned it off, then your antenna system is already set to go.
Because the
hybrid mode uses 30 kilohertz. The bandwidth of your antenna system needs to be 30 kilohertz wide. In order to pass the digital signal.
Yeah, at 1.4:1 VSWR or better.
Right. But the all digital mode only requires 20 kilohertz of bandwidth.
Oh, really? So it's narrower than the hybrid mode.
Yes. It actually is more spectrally. One of the big complaints about the MA1 mode, of course, was the adjacent channel digital splatter. And now the all digital mode tightens that up, and now it fits within 20 kilohertz plus or minus 10 kilohertz from center channel, as opposed to the hybrid mode, which was plus or minus 15. That also means the corollary to that is that there are some antenna systems out there that were not able to do the hybrid mode of HD, but possibly do the all digital mode. So if you were told in the past that you couldn't do HD, you might be able to do the all digital mode.
Okay. If you have a one tower AM system, I kind of get that. You can sweep it and plot it on a Smith chart adjust things so that it's got some wide bandwidth and it's the cusp on the Smith chart is the direction you want to go, whatever that is. If you have a multi tower array, does each tower segment need to have some goodness to it in terms of bandwidth, or is it just the bandwidth of the transmitter looking into the common point that's important?
It's your common point that needs to be the rule of thumb 1.4:1 would apply to your common point. Now that being said, a well-designed array would have good what we call pattern bandwidth. If there were problems in the antenna system, then it would reveal itself in poor pattern performance, where in an analog system you would hear kind of phasing as you got off the side of the main lobe and mm-hmm. towards a null. That has a detrimental effect on digital as well. But of course a consultant would be able to properly design a system for you.
Gary Cavell told us on the phone when we were talking to him on the phone one afternoon, the importance of pattern pattern bandwidth. And he famously said, there's 100 ways to get to 50J0. It's the one way that's the correct way.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
to go back to it, yeah, all the components do matter to get to that common point performance that needs to happen.
And it's probably likely that if some leg or some feed to some tower is really screwy, it's going to affect the common point, and you may not be able to dial that out, and you shouldn't. Everything needs to be right overall, which is why you got to bring a consultant in if you've got some complications.
Yeah, your phase angles and the amount of power ratio being fed to each tower is going to be completely off. If one leg is out, they're all out.
By the way, that's Mike Raid we're talking to. We're also talking to Dave Kolesar on This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, and Chris Tobin is out today. He'll be back next week. We're talking about WWFD in Frederick, Maryland, the all-digital AM station. It's all-digital HD. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what are some of the technicalities about modulating this, what's different, and is your mod monitor of any use to you anymore? You're going to like that answer. And what's the listening experience like, not just in terms of the audio quality? I mean, it's certainly better than AM is or has been. But, you know, like signal acquisition, I'm very curious to hear about when you punch a button, how soon do you hear this digital signal that's got some redundancy built into it? We're going to talk about that coming up. This Week in Radio Tech, episode number 470, is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store. That's BGS.cc. And one of the terrific brands they carry at BGS is Henry. You guys know Henry Engineering. They make all kinds of stuff that you need. And one of them is the Henry Sportscaster. I wish I had one to show you right here. Oh, there's one on the screen. The Henry Sportscaster is a sports broadcast audio control system. And it is ideal for many. I mean, it may not cover every possible situation, but my goodness, what a foundation to build on. It easily handles three of the Henry Sports Pods. Now, these are little boxes that go in front of each of your sports announcers, your play-by-play person, your color person, your spotter. Maybe, you know, they're wearing headsets, sports headsets, or maybe mic and headphones, and the facilities to handle them for muting, for, you know, coughing, for adjusting their individual headphone feed. They're all contained in the Henry Sports Pod, and the Sports Pod plugs directly into the back of the Sportscaster. The Sportscaster is a 1RU box that's really an entire control system for sports or other remote broadcasting. I think it'd be good. Yeah, I know I keep bringing up parade coverage. When I was doing radio back in the early 80s, for some reason, we did a lot of parade coverage. I don't know why. We also did plenty of local high school and college baseball games and some basketball games. And this thing is just perfect for it. It also lets you have a producer on site. If you have a producer, somebody to, you know, keep the scores and the stats straight and let the announcer know it's time for break. Well, the producer can talk to the announcer, the color person, the spotter. The producer can also talk to the field reporter's headphones. Yeah, there's a built-in facility for the field reporter, including a microphone input and headphone output. There's also an input for a crowd mic and for a PA announcer. Of course, the PA announcer input, you know, that could be a mixing console from the venue. If you've got music going on, you want to dial that in or just have the PA announcer. There's also a facility for camera operator headphones. So if you're putting this, you know, on the web, if you're streaming this live, or even if you're a bona fide TV station, this could be a very helpful thing for you to do this remote production in the field. And of course, there's a proper analog program, limited audio output for sending your program mix to the air or to the web. All that's built in. Just an amazing box. Hank Landsberg has really thought this thing out, and people are absolutely loving the Henry Sportscaster. You can get yours at Broadcasters General Store, BGS.cc, or you can give them a call at 352-622-7700. I was just at BGS about 3 weeks ago and got to see Dave Kirsten and Jessica Shoot, Carly and Carrie, and just all the good folks at Broadcasters General Store. Check them out. Their website's great. Give them a call. And they've got sharp pencils on pricing, as my old friend Sam Phillips used to say. Kirk, you call in people at BGS, make sure their pencils are sharp. And they are. Thanks a lot to BGS for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack here with Dave Colasar and Mike Raid, and let's get into the listening experience, and then finally we'll get into some of the weeds of the technicalities of just how this MA3 system works. Dave, I met you at the radio show in Dallas. You let me sit in the car and listen to an actual RF playback of WWFD. But one thing we didn't get to do, I know that, well, let me back up and compare. With the FM HD radio system, when you punch a new station, the first thing you hear is the analog of the signal. And then if the digital is there and the quality of it is good, within about, 4 or 5 seconds or so, the radio will blend over to the HD1. And now I'm thinking 4 or 5 seconds is kind of a long time if there was no analog. And in your all digital AM at WWFD, there is no analog. It's all digital. Tell me about signal acquisition and the listener experience when you're punching up WWFD.
Right. Well, the all digital mode of AMHD has what we call fast acquisition mode. And what it is, if you want to get down into the weeds, is that the PIDS carriers, which are a little bit like pilots, they tell the radio that the station that the radio is tuned to is an MA3 channel, is an MA3 station. And so it tells the radio to just start spitting out audio right away. And what under the hood is happening is that there is a 20 kilobit primary carrier, a primary audio data stream that can be decoded right away within one frame. An HD radio frame for AM is about 1.48, 1.49 seconds. So within 1.5 seconds, the radio locks and goes off to the races and starts putting out audio. Then what happens is that the full MA3 mode kicks in, which is the within three frames, similar to the FM system. So what happens is, as far as the listener experience goes, it starts in mono, and then a few seconds later, stereo pops in. That was actually one of the things that it took us a while to get right at WWF. It took us almost a year, and that actually went back. That goes back to the second part of the question that you asked last break, which was what's involved. And the second part of it is making sure that the transmitter is capable of doing MA3. And our first one was only partially capable of doing MA3. And once we put in a transmitter that was capable of doing the full MA3, then we started seeing all the benefits. Those secondary and tertiary carriers started working, which allowed stereo audio, data services. We have things like artist experience, the images.
Yeah. Okay.
Emergency alerts. That works for FM. That system also works on AM. So you can do essentially all the data services that you currently can do on FM, you can now do on the AM.
Right. And so basically what WWFD has shown is that an MA3 station can achieve both aural and visual parity with anything else in the dashboard, be it FM HD, satellite, streaming. It looks and sounds just like every other service.
Okay. I guess the upshot of what you're hearing, I'm sorry, I'm so worried about signal acquisition because I'm come from a world where, from analog push button, mechanical push button radios, right? Where you push the button and it's right there. And as selling audio processing, as I did for years, and I'm still involved with that, you expect to be able to push a button and pretty quickly hear the station. You do hear it pretty quickly. It's only 1.5 seconds that you start hearing the station in mono. And then within another frame or two, you end up getting the stereo if all the carriers are available to you, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And it's not immediate, but it's probably good enough. And if you think about it, a lot of people who are used to dialing up a stream on their cell phone, they're waiting a lot more than 1.5 seconds to get their stream.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I don't know how critical you know, getting acquisition time below a second and a half is now. But it's the system, it works well. I mean, it works surprisingly well.
I was remiss. I just sent the audio file that you sent me to our producer. Got really crazy busy this afternoon. And so I want to ask our producer, Suncast, to check your email and let me know, Suncast, if you can play an audio file for us. We think this file will be safe for DMCA. It just has very short snippets of a couple of songs and some station-produced audio. So I'll give Suncast a chance to check his email and see if he can get that file. Meanwhile, let me ask a basic, just emotional question about the audio on All Digital AM. How do you feel about it? How do you feel listening to WWFD? And you know, it's not CD quality. It's not bad. Tell me about that.
Right. I think that, I mean, as far as audio quality is, I mean, as far as audio quality goes, you're listening in a car most of the time because, you know, they're terrestrial broadcasting. Its strength is in the car. So you've got a little bit of background noise. So as a result, you know, audio doesn't have to be perfect. But that being said, if you process it correctly, it can sound just as good in the car as an analog FM station. And some people favor it. Some people think it sounds better than an analog FM station because you're not hearing the 75 microsecond preemphasis.
Oh yeah, and you're not dealing with the NRSC AM preemphasis curve either, which can be, you know, challenging,
right?
Difficult, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that the average listener will consider it pleasant. I listen to it a lot, obviously, and I forget that I'm listening to something that's extraordinary. I forget that I'm listening to AM, probably key.
Well, a bit like my feeling with KFUO, realizing that was the hybrid system. And you know what I've noticed? Like, I'm part owner of a bunch of radio stations, and most of them do streaming. And to keep our costs reasonable, we stream using HEAAC V2 at typically 48 or 56 kilobits per second. And, you know, would I evaluate a German microphone with that? Probably not. But does it make my brain pretty happy for songs that I like? Yeah, absolutely. I got several Wi-Fi radios in the house streaming some of my stations, and I like it. It's fine. I wouldn't quite call it cinematic quality, but you know, it's not irritating in any way to me. And so I like to call it entertainment quality. And when I'm driving in the car, sometimes I'll stream my own radio stations on those. And yeah, once in a while I hear something that is not perfect, but I mean, the bandwidth we're using up is really small. So I guess what I'm saying is I, on the one hand, I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with, I'd rather be, listening to absolutely perfect audio. On the other hand, you know, most people are just fine with entertainment quality audio. And that's what I hear from streaming. And that's what I heard from the demos that I've heard. Hey, Suncast tells me that he has the file ready. Dave and Mike, would you like to play it now? And realizing, listeners at home, if you hear this audio file, realize that you're hearing it coded again through whatever delivery method that our show is coming to you on. If you're doing it live on Facebook, if you're listening on YouTube, or streaming it, listening to the MP3 file, you're dealing with that aberration as well. So, Dave, is now a good time to play this little file?
Sure.
Okay. Suncast, go right ahead. We'll be quiet.
Rock all day, dance all night. It's the Gamut.
All right. So we heard the tail end of one song, Sweeper, and the beginning of another song. I wasn't familiar with either song. I liked the second song better. I'd listen to that one again.
Well, you know, I was a teenager in the 90s, so I like Radiohead.
Yeah.
So I like the first song.
And so what we were listening there had actually been transmitted, right? And then you recovered it and recorded it.
That was an off-air recording. Yes.
Okay. Now, and by the way, I realize we're dealing with a lot of stuff between the recording and our ears right now. So are you, listeners. It was a little bright for my taste. Is that something that you find too, or is it just exactly what you want?
The gamut's format is pretty varied. So the audio processing is a compromise between all the different genres that are on. So some tracks sound a little too bright, but then on some of the older tracks really pop out with that kind of processing. So, you kind of have to just find the best compromise,
So tell you what, I've been promising
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry for the delay. Been promising we have Mike get into the weeds with us a bit here. Mike, I'm curious about things that, things like what the transmitter has to be able to pass in order to pass this digital. You know, for us guys in radio, passing digital carriers is pretty new, unless you're already doing FM HD. This is a new world, and your good old AM mod monitor isn't going to help you a whole lot with this mode of operation. And there's no carrier. There's no carrier on your station's frequency like 820 for you guys. Mike, what are some of the things we should know about this MA3 mode and an AM transmitter?
In an analog only or in an MA1 situation, transmitter power is used to create the analog or reproduce the analog, and the digital carriers in MA1, it's very small amount of power because it's so far down. In MA3, 38%, there is a pilot, unmodulated pilot carrier at the center frequency that's helped to form the digital carriers in the quadrature amplitude modulated system. But the rest of that power, 62%, has to be used to create the rest of those carriers. So the amplifiers have to have a lot of headroom. So either the transmitter has to have some sort of look ahead, like real time active pre-correction, or just simply a lot of headroom, because you're dealing with a lot of peak to average ratio. You're talking about very peak power. The average power, which is used to measure the power, license power of a radio station, for WWFD, it's 4.3 kilowatts. However, the peak power that's needed to be dealt with by the transmitter is 28.8 kilowatts. So you're dealing with there's lots of things. And then also the formation of the digital carriers is very dependent upon the switching rates of the pulse width modulator in a typical polyphase PWM transmitter. If the switching or clock rate is too slow, you're going to violate Nyquist, and you're not going to translate the entire magnitude portion of the QAM signal. And when you do that, you just completely will not translate all the carriers. They will not properly form, and it will just never ever work.
Can you take me through a bit of a block diagram of I give you my audio, and it goes into an importer-exporter pair, I suppose, and what happens to it then? Where do the I and Q signals come from, and then what is fed into the actual AM transmitter? Can you help me understand that block by block?
Sure. So, yes, you're absolutely right. In the importer-exporter, the audio that goes in, those are transmitted to E2X packets, which then go to the XGen board, which creates takes the E2 packets, creates the the 64 QAM signal. And a 64 QAM signal is two amplitude modulated carriers, but of different levels. And for them to be passed, to combine and pass, they have to be fed 90 degrees apart. That's hence why the quadrature amplitude modulation. So that all gets combined. Those carriers get created. They get combined and are then sent out to the amplifiers to be amplified and transmitted. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and there's lots of different tools that broadcasters have to use. The mod monitor doesn't do any good anymore, simply because the zero crossings of the magnitude component. The best way I can describe it is in the MA1 system, anybody who's familiar with the MA1 or ever put one on, you usually had to do something what was called DC offset to the audio input. And that was right. To raise the zero crossing point of the magnitude component so that it would be similar to an analog, where you would have, the RF waveform, so it would pinch down to 100%, but it wouldn't go over. So in a magnitude situation, if you looked at the positive modulation in an analog transmitter, it would be over 150%. You'd be going crazy, like, oh my god, my carrier's shutting off. Things just going to go hacky sue. It's going to launch right off and blow off into space. You go to look at the negative polarity, it's not even at 75%.
Right. So instead of a modulation monitor, now probably the best way to ensure compliance is with a spectrum plot. So, like a spectrum analyzer.
A real-time Smith chart one transmitter manufacturer has a real-time Smith chart in their user interface. The other most critical part is the what's called a constellation pattern, which is a grid of dots. The two quadrature signals that are out of phase with one another, kind of they're at very different levels. So what they do is a vector. So you draw a line to a quadrant, and you have once the symbols and the bits are all reassembled, you should have 64 quadrants, 8x8, and these dots you'll see will be perfectly formed on a grid pattern, just like graph paper. And make it look perfect, you'll have 64 dots just nice in a row, nothing spraying off, little dots here, little dots there. The worst thing that can happen is if you have a PDM modulator, a PWM modulator, it doesn't translate all the magnitude component. The secondary carrier, you're not going to be able to form all the carriers. Chances are it's mostly the secondary carriers, because those are part of the later part of the magnitude component. And you're going to instead of having all these nice little dots, you're just going to have a big round ball of a mess. And the receiver can never translate those carriers or demodulate those carriers.
I get the feeling there's not a device out there in a broadcast equipment catalog that lets you see that constellation and see how well it's tuned. Is anybody making that at the moment?
Correct. We have tools internally to us at Xperi that can allow us to view the constellation patterns of the primary carriers, of the secondaries, and of the PIDs carriers. Unfortunately, there's nothing out there right now that can You can't go to a BGS and buy a monitor that does such a thing. This is the chicken and egg problem. Which came first? We got to get the signal on, but there are enough receivers out there. But for other guys who or folks who own radio stations who don't have the Xperi expertise that lives 20 minutes away and is down the road in Columbia, Maryland, this poses a problem. And those are really necessary. And they really need to check with their transmitter manufacturer as well as, whoever does the consulting, what is the transmitter capable of?
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh, and it's quite interesting what these transmitters are capable of. Actually, I think it's time to spring a surprise.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah,
we have something that we tried today since our last conversation. that we want to show you.
Okay.
So WWFD, of course, has, we're broadcasting both the core and enhanced mode of MA3. So we have our secondary and tertiary carriers. Well, what we've done for the first time is we've split these things up just for a test. And we were able to transmit an HD2 on WWFD.
What?
And so right now we are transmitting an HD2. Let's pop this up for a second. Okay, so this is our HD1.
This is the actual air feed off of our reference receiver.
Right.
I hate for our video to get pulled. So yeah, just a couple seconds we post this on YouTube. They're pretty strict.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. This is our HD2.
Even if these procedures may not be done locally,
this is WTOP.
With the feed, and we're able to tune it to the HD2.
With a medical condition, it's
and also we're also transmitting PSD for that HD2.
So you got track data, and we're doing a station logo. So we've got Arist Experience running on HD2 now as well. So we're transmitting.
Good evening.
Images.
We're very happy
for both HD1 and HD2 on WWFD. I think you have the other picture on your phone. We were doing this earlier today, and we couldn't drag all the equipment in here, so we took pictures on our phones. Maybe we can hold up to the camera an image of what you're seeing. An image of what you would see if you had a radio that was tuned.
Oh, wow. You see that logo. Wow.
That is a photo of an image that we transmitted. It's the first image transmitted on medium wave at all on an HD subchannel.
Right. On a multicast. Yep.
So just to make sure I got this. So it's the core audio that is HD1 and this the extended carriers that's your HD2.
Yeah, there's a part of the enhanced carriers, which gives you 20 kilobits as well, but they're divvied up between the data services, which is the Arist Experience and the logo for HD1 and the logo for HD2 and audio for that HD2.
Now, not to oversell this, but currently, we don't believe, we have to check everything, but we don't believe that radios will actually decode this right now. So what will happen is future. This is a feature for future receivers that will probably come out. Sooner than you think. We're gonna do an RF recording of this and send this vector out.
We have to write it into the baseband of the receiver chips, and then once it's written into the baseband, we need to obviously vet it out very well, ring it out, and then send it off to the new baseband code goes to all receiver manufacturers. They're going to have to vet it out, and we're also going to have to certify it, because every radio that goes out is manufactured has to come back to us for certification.
And you know that the inevitable question will be, well, can I get a translator for this?
of course. Why not? Hey, guys, we have got to take a break. We're kind of over time here. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 470. I'm Kirk Harnack. We're talking to Dave Colasar and Mike Raid, and they are at the WWFD transmitter site in Frederick, Maryland, and the first place ever not only to do all digital AM HD, but now doing HD1 and HD2. Not that anybody can actually pick it up. Yeah, that's just amazing. And you heard it here first. Hey, This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends at Angry Audio. And, they don't just have Studio Hub cables. They got their own line of products, too. This is how Angry Audio got started making their own line of products. And this is a simple, effective, and just sweet audio distribution amplifier. And they call it their analog audio distribution gadget. What it is, it's got two different stereo inputs. It's got the, what they call the IHF in, that's the RCA connectors. It's also got professional audio in on XLR connectors. So this is, either way, and you can select from the front panel either the IHF input or the Pro Audio input, either one. And then it's got four stereo outputs, and on each output, you can see on the screen there, you can see you've got a little selector between mono and stereo. If you need a mono feed going somewhere, just click those to mono or stereo. And then the outputs on the back, this comes out of a very standard connection. It is called AES. Oh, which is it? I forget now. It's an AES standard. A lot of people call this the Tascam pinout. You can buy a cable that goes from this D-sub-25 connector, and it then breaks out into whatever you want. You can get it with XLR connectors or bare wires or RCAs. You can buy cables with whatever you want from various audio distributors, and this lets you easily break out the audio from this analog audio distribution gadget. It's also got some mounting options. You can mount two of them side by side in a rack. They have a rack mount kit. They also have a tabletop kit for that. And then they also have a wall mount kit that lets you mount the sucker up on a wall. The audio quality on this thing is absolutely, positively pristine. The same guy who developed a lot of the audio circuits for PR&E consoles, Pacific Recorders consoles, designed these audio circuits. So you know they're super clean. The power supply is built in. It's not a wall wart. This is a reliable, heavy-duty, and awesome sounding piece of gear. So please check that out. You're gonna love it. And so thanks a lot to Angry Audio for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And Angry Audio, the products are available from your favorite dealer. You can call Broadcaster General Store or any of your favorite dealers to get Angry Audio gear. Check out their website too at angryaudio.com. Thanks a lot. All right, welcome back. Kirk Harnack, going to wrap up the show here. And on this show, it just so happened I was able to get hold of five of these HD radios, HD car radios from Directed. They're kind of old, but they work. I'm told they work fine. And we're going to give them away right now. We've had a number of people to share the announcement of this show. And you, if you shared it, you know who you are. They did this on Facebook and a couple on Twitter as well. But I'm going to ask our guests to give me a random number between 1 and 13, and we're going to give away five of these things. So, can we put the camera on Dave and Mike? All right, give me your first number.
Let's start with lucky number 7.
Got it. That would be Alex Hartman. Alex Hartman's a winner. Who else?
Hi Alex.
Number 5. That was my number baseball jersey.
Number 5 up is Edwin Bucant.
Oh.
Hi Ed.
Yeah. All friends of ours. I swear. Yep. All right. Give me another number.
Let's see. We just did an HD2, so let's do 2.
That would be from Indianapolis television engineer Roberta X.
All right.
Yeah.
How about number 12?
Number 12 is Jeff Wiggins. And I barely know Jeff. I'll get to know him better as I get his address to ship this out to him. Jeff Wiggins, congratulations. Who else? Give me another number.
All right. Well, let's do one more number. Let's do number 1.
Number 1 is Bob Poff, P-O-F-F. Bob Poff, congratulations. You have won. So Bob, Roberta, Ed, Alex, and Jeff are all winners. I'll get your addresses in the next coming days, and we'll get these shipped out to you. And maybe send us a picture of your installation. Guys, we got to go because our producer's got a hard out time that he's got to be gone by. Thank you so much. We've got Dave Colasar and Mike Raid, and appreciate you guys being with us. Do we have a 2-shot available of Mike and? And there they go. Guys, thank you so much. I'd love to have you back sometime. Yeah, sure. An hour wasn't enough.
No, you could go hours on this.
We can talk. We'll be here all week.
All right. We'll have you back. And Dave, congratulations on your award from Radio World. You'll be getting a little ceremony for that at next NAB, right?
Thanks. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. You're joining a rank of some good, good people. All right. We got to go. Hey, thanks so much. Check out our sponsors. It's really important to us that you do. Helps us all financially and makes the show possible. Thanks so much to Suncast, our producer. Did yeoman's work today. He's great. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you can find other tech podcasts like What the Tech and even a wrestling podcast. Lots of good stuff going on there. You'll even see Suncast on a couple of these podcasts. We got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.